I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
Hate will not prevail in America. Racism will not prevail in America. Domestic terrorism will not prevail in America. And to make it real clear, silence on this issue, both public and private, from the private sector, silence is complicity.
During a trip to Florida, President Biden denounced last week's shooting in Jacksonville when a racist gunman shot dead three black people at a store near a historically black college. We'll speak to Bishop William Barber, who links the murders to the hateful rhetoric of Governor Ron DeSantis, Donald Trump, and others. Then we look at the role of psychologists in devising the CIA's torture program as a judge at Guantanamo tosses the confession of a man who was repeatedly tortured at CIA black sites. We'll speak to the psychologist Roy Adelson, author of the new book, Doing Harm, How the World's Largest Psychological Association Lost Its Way in the War on Terror.
Democracy relies upon civil society organizations that are willing to stand up to protect human rights and oppose government misconduct. In my new book, Doing Harm, I describe how, during the War on Terror, the American Psychological Association failed to uphold these fundamental responsibilities. In my view, the consequences have been tragic. For detainees victimized by abuse and torture, for the profession of psychology, and for the country as a whole.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Biden administration will, for the first time, send munitions containing depleted uranium to Ukraine, even though the weapons are radioactive and their use causes contamination that's hazardous to human health. Reuters reports the armor-piercing uranium munitions are part of a new military aid package for Ukraine set to be unveiled in the next week. This follows a previous decision by the Biden administration to arm Ukraine with cluster munitions, which have been banned by an international treaty ratified by more than 110 countries. This week, a new report by the Cluster Munition Coalition found 916 deaths and injuries from cluster bombs in Ukraine last year. In Ukraine, Russian drones Sunday struck port infrastructure on the Danube River that's been used by Ukraine to export food and fertilizer to world markets. Ukrainian officials said at least one of the drones crashed in neighboring Romania, a NATO member nation, though officials in Bucharest denied the allegations. In Moscow, the Russian Ministry of Defense said Russian air defenses shot down three Ukrainian drones as they attacked Moscow, the latest in an escalating series of drone strikes on Russian territory. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Sunday he's firing his defense minister, Alexei Reznikov, amidst Ukraine's stalled counteroffensive and a widening corruption probe. Zelensky nominated former Crimean lawmaker Rustem Umerov to replace him. Russian President Vladimir Putin has ruled out rejoining the Black Sea grain deal until Western nations withdraw sanctions put in place after Russia invaded Ukraine. Putin spoke from the Black Sea resort town of Sochi Monday after meeting with the Turkish president, Tayyip Recep Erdogan.
As I've said repeatedly, we were simply forced to make this decision since Western countries have blocked and continue to block the implementation of the grain deal in terms of ensuring the access of Russian agricultural producers to the world markets. That is, they refuse to lift the sanctions on the export of our grain and fertilizers.
U.S. officials say North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will soon travel to Russia for talks with President Putin. The two leaders are expected to discuss an arms deal that would see North Korea provide artillery ammunition to Russia for its war in Ukraine. Meanwhile, the Financial Times reports lenders at four of China's biggest banks have stepped in to extend billions of dollars to Russian banks that have faced sanctions since Russia invaded Ukraine. The UN Refugee Agency is warning as many as 1.8 million people will flee Sudan by the end of the year as fighting continues between rival military factions. The UN estimates the conflict has already displaced about 1 million people. Another 800,000 are expected to leave Sudan in the coming months. Meanwhile, Doctors Without Borders is reporting Sudanese refugees arriving in South Sudan are suffering from an alarming rise of measles and malnutrition. In the Sudanese capital of Khartoum, many residents say they cannot afford basic necessities, including bread.
Bread is available, but people cannot buy it. The loaf of bread costs 70 Sudanese pounds or 12 U.S. cents. People cannot afford it. This price is too high for them.
In Gabon, the leader of last week's military coup has been sworn in as interim president. During a ceremony Monday, General Brice Oligui Nguema promised, quote, free, transparent, and credible elections to restore civilian rule, but gave no timeline for elections. The military coup ousted President Ali Bongo, whose family had ruled the oil-rich nation since 1967. Oligui is a cousin of the ousted president and the former head of Gabon's presidential guard. Meanwhile, in Niger, tens of thousands of protesters rallied Saturday outside a French military base demanding French troops leave Niger. Tension has been escalating between Niger and its former colonial ruler since a military coup in Niger in late July. Niger's new military leaders have ordered French troops and France's ambassador to leave the country, but France has ignored the requests. Protesters in Niger Saturday called on the French to leave them alone.
People say, oh no, people get paid to go out and protest. That's a thing of the past. It's the people of Niger who are out here. You'd have to be blind not to see it. We're fed up. We want to be responsible for ourselves. People think we're babies. Leave us alone. Is that too much to ask?
Chinese President Xi Jinping will skip the G20 summit when it convenes in India next weekend. On Monday, China's foreign ministry said Premier Li Qiang will instead lead China's delegation to talks in Delhi. This comes amidst a worsening border dispute between China and India, with thousands of troops deployed to a disputed region of the Himalayas. A major new report backed by the United Nations finds invasive species are spreading around the world at an unprecedented rate, driving extinctions, transmitting diseases, and threatening food supplies for millions of people. Ecologist Helen Roy, who co-authored the report by the Intergovernmental Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, says more than 3,500 harmful invasive species are seriously threatening nature while causing untold economic damage to humans.
But of those costs that are tangible that we've been able to gather together, we can see it's $423 billion annually. But we also know that looking back, then these figures have been quadrupling every 10 years. And we have no reason to think that that isn't going to be happening into the future.
The first Africa Climate Summit opened Monday in Nairobi. U.S. Climate Envoy John Kerry pushed for the establishment of a carbon market, but many African climate justice activists pushed back against the idea. Ahead of the summit, Oxfam slammed wealthy nations for delivering a, quote, pittance to help East Africa confront the climate crisis. According to Oxfam, over 31 million people are currently facing acute hunger across Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, and South Sudan, due in part to the climate crisis, which has disproportionately impacted the region. In Spain, at least three people were killed. Three others are missing as unprecedented rainfall inundated Madrid and other cities Monday. Flooding swept away bridges, halted commuter rail traffic. In Greece, where authorities have finally brought unprecedented wildfires under control, at least one person's dead, another missing after intense rainstorm battered mountain towns. Forecasters say some parts of central Greece could see over a foot of rain in just 24 hours. That's nearly double the annual average average rainfall totals for the capital, Athens. Here in the United States, a scorching summer heat wave brought record temperatures to central and eastern states Labor Day. Parts of Wisconsin and Minnesota suffered triple-digit heat Monday, the unofficial last day of summer. In Minnesota, guards ordered a lockdown of the Stillwater Men's Prison Sunday after prisoners refused to return to their cells to protest dangerous conditions. Advocates say some 1,200 prisoners spent the holiday weekend with no access to showers or ice and limited time for recreation due to understaffing. Temperatures outside the prison, much of which lacks air conditioning, approached 100 degrees Fahrenheit Sunday and Monday. In Nevada, tens of thousands of participants at the annual Burning Man Festival were left stranded over the weekend after torrential rainfall covered normally dry campgrounds in mud and made roads impassable for decades. Attendees had been told to shelter in place since Friday. The extreme weather capped a Burning Man festival that proceeded despite the objections of climate activists who on August 27th peacefully blockaded a two-lane highway leading to the campgrounds to demand Burning Man ban private jets, single-use plastic, and unlimited use of generators and propane tanks. That protest was broken up by a Nevada tribal police officer who rammed into their blockade, injuring a protester before drawing a pistol, tackling a demonstrator, and threatening to shoot activists. In a statement, the Seven Circles Alliance activist group, which organized the protest, responded, quote, "The excessive response is a snapshot of the institutional violence and police brutality that's being shown to anyone who's actively working to bring about systemic change within the United States, including the climate movement," unquote. Burning Man organizers estimate the festival's carbon footprint at about 100,000 tons of carbon dioxide per year, equivalent to the annual emissions of 22,000 gas-powered cars. A judge in Florida has struck down congressional maps created by Republican Governor Ron DeSantis, ruling they violate Florida's constitution by diminishing black voters' ability to elect the candidate of their choice. The maps were approved last year over the objections of black Florida lawmakers who staged an impromptu sit-in protest against the congressional redistricting plan. In other Florida news, DeSantis backed out of a planned meeting Saturday with President Biden, who traveled to Florida to survey damage from Hurricane Idalia. And Republican state lawmakers in Alabama continue to defy a Supreme Court order to redraw congressional maps after they were found to have violated the 1965 Voting Rights Act by diluting the power of black voters. The Guardian reports a new map proposed by Republicans still includes only one majority black district, making another Supreme Court challenge likely. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, we speak to Bishop William Barber, who links the racist murders in Jacksonville, Florida, to the hateful rhetoric of Governor Ron DeSantis, Donald Trump, and others. Stay with us. Jacksonville musician Khan Jamal. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We're looking now at the rise in racist attacks in the United States in a new campaign to take back the mic from those who seed hate. The latest deadly attack came just over a week ago in Jacksonville, Florida, when a white supremacist gunman shot and killed three black people at a Dollar General store, then shot himself dead. The gunman used racial slurs, had a swastika-emblazoned assault-style AR-15 rifle, along with a handgun. He attacked the store in a predominantly black neighborhood after being turned away from the HBCU campus of Edward Waters University, the historically black college. Law enforcement officials say there's no question the killings were racially motivated. The three victims were Angela Carr, Gerald Galyon, and A.J. Laguerre Jr. This is Sabrina Rozier, grandmother of Galyon's four-year-old daughter.
My grandbaby keeps saying this, "Where's my daddy?" And all I can do is grab her because I don't have the words right now.
I thought racism was behind us, but evidently it's not. You was a coward. You went in and shot these innocent people for nothing that you didn't even know.
That's Sabrina Rozier speaking with CNN. Federal law enforcement has opened a civil rights investigation into the attack as a possible hate crime, an act of domestic violent extremism. This comes as federal data shows hate crimes are on the rise in the United States, that black people were targeted in half of all the racially motivated hate crimes. On Saturday, President Biden addressed the Jacksonville attack when he was in Florida to tour storm damage after Hurricane Idalia.
We're still reeling from the shooting rampage near Edward Waters University and HBCU last weekend. A terrorist act driven by racial hatred and animus. Our hearts are with you, those of you who are affected and all your families. A terrorist act, as I said, driven by hatred and animus. And ladies and gentlemen, let me say this clearly. Hate will not prevail in America. Hate will not prevail in America. Racism will not prevail in America. Domestic terrorism will not prevail in America. And to make it real clear, silence on this issue, both public and private, from the private sector, silence is complicity. We must not, we will not remain silent.
President Biden was in Florida to tour the hurricane damage. Governor DeSantis refused to meet him there. He went around with Senator Rick Scott of Florida. Just last year, a gunman targeting black people killed 10 people at a grocery store in Buffalo, New York, the Tops grocery store. In 2021, a gunman killed 8 people, including 6 Asian American women, in Atlanta. The Jacksonville, Florida shooter reportedly left a suicide note and other writings that laid out his racist ideology. Now a diverse group of faith leaders is calling on elected leaders in Florida and nationwide to, quote, cease and desist from sowing division and hate. The move comes after Republican Florida governor and presidential hopeful Ron DeSantis spoke at a vigil where he was booed by the crowds, with one person shouting out, "Your policies cause this." DeSantis and Florida Republicans have imposed racist laws, including rolling back diversity and inclusion policies and attacking African-American studies. DeSantis also opposes gun law reform. The new Take Back the Mic from Haters campaign will also mark this month's 60th anniversary of the horrific bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, often called Bombingham at the time, that killed 4 young black girls September 15, 1963. For more, we're joined by Bishop William Barber, president and senior lecturer, Repairers of the Breach, founding director of the Center for Public Theology and Public Policy at Yale Divinity School. His new piece for The Guardian is headlined, "The Racist Murders in Jacksonville Didn't Happen in a Vacuum. Words Came First." Bishop Barber, welcome back to Democracy Now! Talk about the context in which that young white black shooter, leaving behind racist manifestos, first tried to get into a historically black college when turned away by a brave security guard, opened fire at a dollar store.
Yeah, I mean, Bishop Reed of the AME's church in Florida, the oldest black denomination, has been working with myself and others to bring together a diverse group of clergy, Jews, Muslims, Christians, to actually have a whole season of resistance that will continue even after the actions. This coming Thursday, having a press conference in to announce what's going on, calling for 10 days of fasting, confession, and repentance, and for politicians to cease and resist or resign, and then calling for the communities to rise up, take back the mic, not let hate have the last word, and to mobilize and register to vote. On the Saturday, next Friday, will be a massive leaflet drop of these cease and desist by students, black and white and Asian students, in Tallahassee, leaving from the conference of the AME Church. And then on Saturday the 16th, the one day anniversary right after the bombing of the four girls in Birmingham, there will be a massive gathering in Jacksonville, diverse people coming together and denouncing all of this hate. You think about, we got to talk about what, not just who has killed these people and who, what is killing across this country. DeSantis and others are spewing hate rhetoric, hate against black history, hate against trans people, hate against women, hate against immigrants. And the suggestion is that these are the problem. Now, we know that this is this division and distraction. They use hate rhetoric and culture wars to distract from the areas that he's failed as a governor, which I'd like to talk about in a second. But this has a history. In the early 1900s, Woodrow Wilson spewed hate, called Birth of a Nation that glorified the Klan, the history that the nation needed. And in a few years, what did you have? You had Red Summer, where black men and others were killed and run out of town all over this country in reaction to what was being spewed by the president. In 1963, you had an Alabama governor, George Wallace, say segregation yesterday, today, and tomorrow. He loosed the idea that black people were the problem, that fight for integration was the problem. By the end of the year, you had people blown up in Birmingham, dogs sicked on children, children blown up in Alabama. And if you continue down this road, in 1960, August 27, 1960, the Florida legislature, the extremists, the Dixiecrats, were railing against integration. They were pushing all kind of divisive rhetoric. Even the governor, who was a moderate at the time, Collins, but he had said that the Supreme Court had overreached. What happened? You had the axe handle mob in Jacksonville, where white mobs brought axe handles and beat black men while the police watched until black men started fighting back, and then they joined in. So there is this history of not just who kills, but what kills and what creates the atmosphere. And spewing hate from the most powerful levels of government gives license. It others people. It puts it into ethos and suggests that it's all right to eliminate folks. So what happens is this guy goes to a black HBCU. But he's been hearing all the while that black history is a problem. It's a lie. Wokeness is a lie. So if he's already skewed toward racism, then he begins to hear from the most powerful people, this is what you do. It can trigger. We're not saying DeSantis did the killing. But as Dr. King said at the death funeral of the four girls that were killed, he said, we must not just talk about who, but what. What killed them? And lastly, I want to put this on the record. It's not just DeSantis. Down in Florida, he has gotten black people, certain black scholars, to join with him in lies about black history and calling for the elimination of courses. He's gotten black people to join him, some of them, to join him in pushing against affirmative action program. Their guess is guilty as well, because it doesn't matter what the color of your skin is. Once you spew this stuff and loose it and suggest that people are the problem, they're not just people with problems, but problem people, it can create all kinds of justifications in the ethos for violence and other kinds of death.
And Bishop Barber, I wanted to ask you, in the same climate of intolerance and hate that is promoted by some of these top Florida leaders, we see a judge rule on a redistricting case, congressional redistricting in North Florida, saying that DeSantis and the other political leaders violated the state's constitution, ordering them to create a new map. Your response to this news?
Well, you know, I know about that. In North Carolina, we beat back extremists who redistricted, and we beat them in court, found out that they had engaged in racism with surgical intention. And what we know what redistricting is another form of diversion and division and lies, because what it says is that somehow people are cheating, somehow people are not doing right. But what the extremists, they want to cheat because they can't win. They can't win on policies. So what they want to do is create a situation where they stack, pack, and bleach black voters, not just so black people can't elect black people, but so black people and white people and others can't form fusion coalition to elect the candidates of their choice. And why do they do this? Why are they so afraid? Because DeSantis and those with him, they don't want to talk about the real record. That's why they redistrict illegally. That's why they engage in culture wars. They don't want to talk about Florida. There are 9 million poor and low-wealth people, 44% of the state, and their policies aren't doing anything about that. They don't want to talk about the 7 million voters in Florida that are poor and low-wealth, and if just 3% of them would vote, that haven't voted, they could send any of them home. They don't want to talk about the fact that in Florida, over 4 million people make less than a living wage, while the legislature there and the governor there have been blocking living wages. They don't want to talk about that's 32% of white workers and 57% of black workers. They don't want to talk about the fact that you have over 2 million people in Florida, 2.5 million people who are uninsured even during the pandemic, and that the life in Florida, the life expectancy went down in Florida. And one study shows that among Republicans, their life expectancy went down, and it's directly connected to the ways DeSantis and others like him railed against vaccines, railed against protections during COVID. They don't want to talk about the fact that 8.4 million workers, 78% of the workforce, do not have access to paid leave. They don't want to talk about when you end cuts in Medicaid, 800,000 people who lost access to health care. See, they support all of that, those policies. So they don't want to talk about this. So where do they want to focus? They want to focus on culture wars and division and dissension, and they want to fight for redistricting, racist redistricting, which undermines the ability for votes to count. And that's why when we criticize them, we can't just talk about hate. We've got to make the connections. One of the things we've said to Democrats is don't just talk about the deaths that are caused when somebody uses a gun to kill. Connect that to the deaths that come when people are kept in poverty. Poverty is now the fourth leading cause of death. So if you are fighting addressing poverty and fighting addressing living wages and fighting addressing health care, that is also a form of death and a form of violence. We have to connect the dots. Racist voter suppression creates death, because when you suppress the right to vote and you stack and pack and bleach black voters, you allow extremists to get elected who then, once they get elected, they block health care, they block living wages, they block addressing poverty. And when you do those things, people die. Bad public policy creates death. Racist rhetoric and division can create a context of death, give people the license to kill. All of it is deadly, and we must take back the mic, raise up an army of love and truth and life that will say, we're not having it anymore. We're going to call you to cease, desist, to repent, to confess, and if you won't, then we've got to mobilize and send some people home so that they won't have the power and the mic to continue to do what they're doing. They may have the same opinion, but they won't have the power and the power of the office and the mic to continue to spew their divisive rhetoric.
And Bishop Barber, I wanted to ask you, in this recent hurricane Idalia, clearly the country is facing and the world is facing more and more natural disasters, so many of them fueled by climate change. President Biden goes down to Florida, and the Governor DeSantis doesn't even bother to meet with him. Your response to the president's words, especially he spoke out against the attack, this racist attack, as well as offering assistance to the people of Florida ravaged by the Idalia.
Well, you know, DeSantis, though he's trained and educated even at Yale and got a law degree, he's rooted in racism and meanness. He's decided that this is his way to office: distraction, division, deflection, focusing on culture wars so that he cannot be labeled as a failed governor. That's what he really is, not a presidential candidate. He's a failed governor. Anytime you have this many poor, low-wage people and low-wage workers and you haven't addressed those issues, you're a failed governor. The president was right to call out the racism and call out the rhetoric and say that if private or publicly, if you're quiet, then you're complicit. I would also encourage the president to go one step further, though.